The Song Confessional Podcast
contains mature themes.
Great.
So put your children to sleep. Really good. Thank you, Finn.
Great.
This is Walker Lukens, and you are listening to the sixth episode of Tell you what we do here at the Song Confession. We travel around the country in our little blue trailer, and we record people telling us stories anonymously. We call them confessions. We give our favorite confessions to our favorite songwriters, who then write and record an original song based on your confession. Each week you'll hear the confession, the song it inspired, and an interview with the songwriters. I'm sitting here with the favorite of my three boyfriends. Tell him your name, winner.
I'm mostly boyfriend number one.
Yeah.
I believe that's the bottom bitch.
Whoa.
Woo.
Okay, we got saucy right away. What's your name, BB?
Zach Catanzaro.
And Zach, what band are we going to spend time with on this episode?
We have Mini Horse up from Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Ypsilanti, Michigan. That word is a joy to say.
It really is. Ypsilanti.
Mini Horse just put out a full-length record called Living Room Art on Park the Van Records, and they describe themselves as Last Dream Prom.
Fascinating genre description.
I don't know what that means.
I'm also pretty clueless about it, but it's got some beautiful imagery. It's kind of like, it's smoky, it's hazy, it's happy, it's a little nervous.
Yeah, there's a disco ball very slowly turning.
Slow disco ball, maybe some pastels, like faded pastel suits.
I keep seeing Michael J. Fox just like walking in being like, can I sit in? And the band's like, okay. And then he's playing Eddie Van Halen licks over like 50s music. But honestly, I still don't understand why they call themselves that.
Yeah, I like any band that's going to come up with a creative description about their genre.
Completely agree.
Own it.
Living Room Art is a great listen. I highly recommend you check it out after you listen to this episode and hear the song they wrote for us called Not As Clever As You Think.
Yeah, which is a very aptly titled song. This is an interesting confession. It's a bit of a different case than most of what we've heard so far. They wrote this song with the intention of the confessor not liking it.
Yes, they wanted the confessor to hate it, and they actually spent a lot of time sort of calculating and rewriting and revising the lyrics, hoping that the confessor would hate it.
Making sure that there wasn't a single word that might make him feel good about himself.
So, without further ado, here's our confession.
All right. Welcome.
Hi. What's up?
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Thank you. So you came maybe with a story prepared or?
I guess maybe like 2 minutes ago I started thinking about them. I got two. Actually, you're going to be the first person to know.
Wow.
But I got to get this shit off my chest because it's been weighing on me. So I will do the first one, which isn't as, I guess it's still pretty juicy. So been dating this girl or was dating this girl for 2 years. She was pretty emotionally abusive, all that, the whole deal. You know how that goes. Part of the reason we have such an emotionally abusive relationship is because she cheated a ton. So for like the last 2 years, it's been like a hectic situation where like she feels like shit because she's a cheater. But here's the plot twist of this whole thing. I've been dating two other girls during those 2 years. So I've technically had three relationships going on at the same time. And I don't mean like dating them. I mean like full on relationships in three different cities. All at the same time. Yep. So the great thing about this whole story is that all three of these girls are now living in Austin, Texas. And two of them live 4 minutes from me. So how we're going to solve this problem, I have no fucking clue. We are going to figure it out. I'm freaking out a little bit about it.
When did this all happen? Did they just move here?
Yeah, so one of them And they're all, so here's the crazy thing. They're all different, right? So like one's like 29, one's like 22, one's 25.
Can
so
I ask you how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 27.
Okay. Right in the mix.
Yes, exactly. So like keep the young one to keep me young, keep the old one to keep me grounded. You know the whole deal, man. One of them just moved like 2 weeks ago. I hadn't talked to her in a while. She's the one that like cheated on me, but like doesn't know I cheated on her a ton. Basically she's had like inclinations, like there's a lot of girls that she hates that are like my friends, but she doesn't know that I've been with all those girls. So anyways, yeah, she just moved. So the reason she's back in my life is because she called me drunk and she was just like, come over to my house and send me the address. And I was like, I know that street. Wait a minute. That's where I do my grocery shopping. Fuck. We go to the same grocery store. That's not a deal. So that's that. That's my confession right now. So I need to figure that out.
What do you think your plan of attack is going to be? Are you going to try to pick one? Is it the strongest survives? Are we doing survival of the fittest? Or are you going to keep them all going as long as possible?
No, honestly. Okay, so here's the thing. I think it's one of those like competition things. It's like my thing is like I love competition. So it's like kind of a competition right now. It's like not for them, but for me. Like how long can I keep this going? Mm. Like how long until I get caught, until it blows up in my face? And to be honest with you, I know it's going to, but I'm kind of cocky about it that I'm like, it's not. So I still don't have like a doomsday plan. I'm just gonna keep this going forever. And to be honest with you, you're saying like, oh, like which one's gonna win? I don't think any of them are gonna win. If they're dumb enough to not notice the two other girls after 2 years, there's no way I want to marry them. So yeah, so we'll figure it out. We'll keep it going as long as we can. The 21-year-old's gonna fuck me on Twitter and blow my spot up and scratch my car.
At least you know.
Yeah, like I know it's coming down. Yeah, I'm not oblivious to the fact. It's like it's just kind of like, you know, that's just tools of the trade, I guess. You just gotta deal with it. But on top of all that, so here's another great story. So I just moved here, right? So in my last city, okay. I met this other chick, not related to the three previous chicks. One night standed her, right? Gave her a completely different name. She was from out of town, whatever. I don't know how to put this. So she's like, not necessarily religious, but pretty like, conservative, I guess. So like opened up, said she hadn't had like a lot of sexual partners, blah, 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 blah. Well, anyways, we got to drinking and you know how that goes. So we did the deed. And I looked her up just out of curiosity, and she's pregnant, and the time frame is right around when we hooked up. And like I haven't seen any pictures of dudes in her life, like, you know what I mean? Like, not like, oh, we're so excited for this baby, like we're so so right now that's my other conundrum. Do like I reach out and be like, because she can't find me because I gave her a fake name, like completely fake name. So,
and no phone number exchange.
No phone, no, and hell no. So yeah, I'm not on any of that stuff. So I'm not on social. I'm not, because when you're dating three girls, you can't be. That's how you get caught.
Clearly.
So,
clearly.
Yeah. So I think I might have a kid, and I'm dating three chicks at the same time.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Hi, this is Jim Eno.
Hey, this is Walker. So, Jim, one thing that our listeners don't know is that most of the time, the producer of the session doesn't know the artist ahead of time.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So not only are you, making something from nothing, right? That the band is writing the song on the spot and you're recording it shortly thereafter, but you're also getting to know each other.
Correct.
So is that a process that you would describe as challenging?
I mean, it can be. One of the difficult things is not knowing what the artist plays instrument-wise, knowing how to actually build up a song by what they play and what we can put together here at the studio. So there's a lot of feeling out process. You don't want to assume that the artist knows how to play every instrument. You have to be like, so, do you play anything? Stuff like that.
One thing I've encountered, too, is that sometimes writing songs is really deep, really personal.
Yeah.
And so the person is a little touchier than they might normally be in that particular part of it. So you got to kind of tiptoe around them.
I haven't noticed that only because the time constraints are so, I mean, there's no time to do anything. So I've found that it actually frees up the songwriter in that they can let go of a lot of things, and we're just working so fast that a lot of times they're not dwelling on things and they're just going for what everyone thinks is exciting in the studio.
So we thought today we would call James Wesley Esri, who produced this Mini Horse song,
right,
and ask him what it was like.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
What's up?
Hey.
Hey, Wes. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. Can you hear both of us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear both of you.
Oh, that's good.
That's great news.
So what was it like working with Mini Horse?
It was great. They were heading in from South By and literally did the drive and went straight to my studio. So at first, it was me just trying to like make everyone feel comfortable and get relaxed and stretch their legs for their car drive. But after that, I think Ben had some of the song already ready. I can't remember if the whole song was already written, but the band hadn't heard it before.
Wes, Prince says you don't have to watch Dynasty to have an attitude. Do you agree or disagree?
Wait, say that again?
Hey, Wes, what's your favorite fizzy drink?
My favorite fizzy drink is Topo Chico.
Here's Not As Clever As You Think by Mini Horse.
You wanted someone to grab.
Not As Clever As You Think was written by Ben Collins. It was performed by Ben Collins, Christian Anderson, and John Fossum.
It was engineered, produced, and mixed by James Wesley Esri.
And mastered by Chris Longwood.
Walker, have you ever written a track that was intended for somebody not to like?
I have written mean songs about people, unkind songs. I don't know that I've ever written a song with the specific mission of someone else not liking it.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. I feel like you've got to tiptoe around the circumstances of writing a song like that. Like, yeah. Very appropriate in this scenario, but it's not a personal vendetta that the song was written to diss somebody.
Exactly. The closest I've ever come to writing a song that I hoped someone else would not like, I guess, is I did write a song for our president called "We See You." But even that song, it's fairly empathetic to how difficult it must be to be the president, which I'm a little bummed at, honestly. I wish I could have been, you know, stuck with the hate a little longer.
Yeah, that's fair. You're just like a little too empathetic, for that fucking asshole.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I did have a moment when we were on tour in the spring where we were performing it, and like, you know, my experience of performing the songs is because so much of it is just muscle memory that I can actually sing the song and be thinking about the song. Sometimes the lyric is, "Well, is it more than you wanted, stuck out in the big bright lights?" And I was like, man, I'm being kind of nice. I never really thought about that. Here I am a year and a half later realizing I'm being a little nice.
So the answer is, yes, you've written a diss track and it was kind of nice.
Yep. Yep. But I think Not As Clever As You Think is really mean.
Yeah, it is. And effectively mean.
And I love that he just totally doesn't even try to, like, tell the story of the guy dating two women or maybe impregnating another one. He's just like, no, here's everything that's wrong with you, and I see who you really are.
Yeah, it's a very intentional critique.
Yeah.
And a necessary one from what it sounds like.
Absolutely. You're about to hear my interview with Ben, but we talk all about the intent of the song and men like this.
Interview. You are speaking with Ben Collins. I'm the singer and guitar player in the band Mini Horse.
What was this confession about? Can you, in your own words, what did you listen to?
Sure, yeah. So the confession, it was interesting because he started off by talking about how he had some girlfriend that had cheated on him. And so you start out feeling a little bit bad for the guy, but then he very, very quickly spirals into the part where he goes, no, but in fact, what she doesn't know is I was cheating on her the entire time. And it's like everything that he says in this thing, it's clear through his voice that he's just excited to talk about it. It doesn't feel like a confession in any regard. It feels very much like he wants to kind of talk about this, and he wants to kind of tell somebody how sweet he is, you know, like how many girls he's been with and stuff like that. And it just feels gross, like right away. And so what he says is that not only has he been cheating on this girl for 2 years, but it's not just like one-off little, you know, escapades. He's actually got several full relationships going on that he's been juggling between these two girls, and now they're in the same city. Kind of like it's a big accomplishment. For a while, you're kind of like, oh, this guy's a cheater, and he seems kind of proud of cheating and all this stuff. But the point where I actually started to just kind of lose all my respect, there's a line in there where he says, or the interviewer asks him, what's your end game? Like, are you trying to pick one of these girls? Where do you think you're going to go with this? And he essentially says, you know, if either of these girls are dumb enough to let me do this to them, then I don't think either of them is smart enough for me, or something along those lines. I was just like, oh my God.
I had the exact same experience that you've described. I've met men like that. It's something that I'm used to. So a lot of times it doesn't really sink in, but when he said the thing about all of the women being, because he's able to cheat on them, that they're too dumb and he would never marry them. That was the part where I was like, man, you are.
Yeah. It's like the emotional equivalent of like, yeah. Stop hitting my fist with your face or something like that.
Exactly.
Jesus, dude. It was just so such an unbelievable lack of self-awareness, I think. And just basic human decency.
I completely agree. You know, and to be honest with you, we almost didn't include this confession in our project.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest with you too, and I think you were on this thread, but there was a point where you know, and I love this idea of this podcast, and we were very excited, and then we got the confession. And I wrote our label back, and I said, can we check in on this? Because I think I don't know if I can do this one.
I, you know, this is the thing. This is the thing. I remember that because you basically were like, I don't want to say anything nice. You know, and I was like,
yeah,
don't say anything.
Yeah, I was
like,
if
nice.
I do this, I'm not. It's not going to be friendly. And I don't know. Like, and that was another thing. Even listening back to it now, I guess I don't get a lot of joy out of this song or anything like that, just because it does go to this sort of negative space that we don't, you know, we kept calling it like a diss track by the end of it, but
yeah,
we've never really gone down that road before. So it was actually, part of it was mildly fun during the process, just because we got to be like, you know, screw you, dude, or whatever.
But, yeah.
But it, you know, there's not a lot of, I don't get a lot of joy in listening back to it right now, just because it puts me back thinking about this guy and everything.
I put your song in the same category as like You're So Vain, Carly
sure.
Simon song, because it's there's a few levels to it. You know, there is the first level, which is it's about a guy who is, I mean, he's truly narcissistic. He's a super narcissist, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just leeching off of all these people, all these women. And then, but the other thing is that I think if he heard this song, he would probably like it.
Yeah,
on the
I know.
One hand, because it's about him. But I do think that it would be, it's pretty biting. I mean, the back to the lyric, I really like that. I promise you're not as clever as you think. That's a really good line for a guy like that.
Yeah, we iterated over the lyrics a couple times, and you know, we took out things too that were kind of dissy, but that we thought maybe he would like. Perhaps he was treating this kind of like some roast me, you know, like roast me, that subreddit where people go on there and they're like, they post a picture and they're like, roast me, and then everybody like roasts them, but they get some sort of, I guess, like perverse joy out of it or something. So
wow.
In my head I was thinking maybe he was doing that, where it's just like, man, this guy, as long as it's about him, he's gonna enjoy it. In part it was a struggle to think of like, all right, what wouldn't he actually like? And I'm not sure that, I'm still not sure we accomplished it. He might still enjoy the track just because it is about him. So who knows?
So most of the time, I would say 95% of the time, we get songs that are empathetic towards the confessor. And the thing that is awesome about your song is it's a reaction, not just to having to think about this asshole for so long, but also... Yeah, I think the reason it would offend him is you just keep saying it's like a waste of your time to think about someone like this. You know,
that was what we came to eventually. It's just the fact that essentially he's wasting our time. He knows he's wasting our time. The point the reason he went into this confession was probably explicitly to cause a bunch of people to have to spend their time thinking about him and his situation, which is essentially at the core of his narcissism.
You know, one thing, the other thing about this was I really wanted to give this confession to a male songwriter. And the reason I did is that I think, you know, there needs to be more conversations like this where two men can talk about how terrible this person is, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, early on we just decided that this is not the time, you know, in history to be giving guys like this a pass on this sort of stuff. Certainly talking about abuse and the way that men can and often do behave is something that's coming more to the forefront, which is good, and it's important to talk about this stuff. And it did seem like he did seem like an abuser to me. Also, I'll say I don't know all the details, but it's pretty hard to come away from hearing that and not say, okay, this guy is an abuser in some form, be it emotionally, or he's certainly a manipulator. And then, oh, that was another line in the song talking about, I just had to, you know, waste my time listening to you cry about your own abuse. To sit there and reframe his own actions that is supposed to make us feel anything but negative towards him is kind of appalling.
True.
And yeah, it's just like, it doesn't seem like a good time just in the grand scheme of things to be letting anything like this slide. And certainly as a jumping off point for conversation, we thought about that too and how, you know, it'd totally be worth doing in that capacity.
You know, the other thing I'm curious about is like, do you encounter people like this in your day to day?
I think that
when I say people, I just mean, do you encounter men like this?
I'm sure I do. It's a great fear of mine that, you know, I think that somewhere in my head, because what struck me about this is the possibility that this guy is actually not doing any of this stuff on purpose, that maybe these, his sort of abuses and actions are truly unconscious. So I worry that guys go about their day and have tendencies like these without knowing it. That's one of my great fears, is because everyone feels like, oh, you know, not all men do this kind of stuff, but you know, maybe what we really need is just self inventory. I'm kind of grateful. I've been in a relationship mostly for the last like 7 years, so I haven't had to like navigate a lot of the same stuff that my single friends have. But certainly you see things that people do casually when they're out, and you look at the way that people interact in their unconscious moments and sometimes see things that are alarming. I don't think that there's anyone that's been, that I know, who's been as brash as this guy, or as sort of surface level shitty and abusive. But, you know, you see little things in your male friends sometimes that are alarming.
Yeah. I'm more or less in the same position as you. I'm very much on the sidelines. I've been in a relationship. And I know what you're saying. You do see these little things in your male friends, and depending on how close they are to you, you know, it's very hard to say something. I think there's a defensiveness there, and also it's like you're in a relationship, so what do you know? But the thing that I have noticed a lot is that I find myself around just old school misogyny every once in a while. Definitely touring. I mean, being a touring musician, you know, you leave your little bubble and you encounter, you're like, whoa, I haven't heard anyone speak that way in a minute.
Totally.
And it's very difficult. You know, I mean, obviously the in an ideal world, you would be able to sort of speak up and say something.
Yeah, for sure. But, and I tend to when it's, I guess I tend to when I feel like it's someone I know you know, whenever possible, I guess I would try and say something about it. But you're right. It's like when you go out and you kind of leave the bubble and you see it more boisterous or more outwardly facing forms of that thing, it is such a shock. But
yeah,
it's you know, important to remember too, there are these subtle ways that it shows up in, I guess, art and music scenes too, because we are in these progressive circles.
Yeah.
And so it's way less surface level, but it's definitely still there. I remember, you remember that thing when, I think it was Heathcliff B, the publicist, it was like, it came out that he was, I think this was even before the Me Too thing really got its steam.
I remember Amber Kaufman came out.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like, I had met that guy back in the day and stuff, and you know, everyone seems so progressive and hip and cool. But then you find these things out, and certainly a number of similar situations have happened in the Detroit scene too. And it's just like, it really makes you take a step back and wonder, like, who you can trust in a way, because, you know, it sounds bad, but in those, outside the bubbles, at least, you know, you kind of know who those people are. But you almost get this like PTSD around it when you're in music scenes or art scenes and you don't know. There's that shittiness, but then there's also this like, there's this like sociopathic layer on top of it that enables them to seem like it's, you know what I mean? It's just creepy.
The thing I hear the most run-of-the-mill misogynistic attitude that I encounter a lot is male musicians holding female musicians to a different standard, or in the kind of unconscious thing that you brought up before, just sort of unconsciously commenting on their appearance or crediting their band for their sound, their band more than they would you know, let's say a male fronted project or something. And
yeah, definitely.
And you know, that kind of stuff, that is the stuff I feel like, you know, if you are an ally or whatever, you have, that's when you have the power to sort of push back on that. Because, you know, like the guy in the confession, I mean, that is so extreme. Mm-hmm. I haven't encountered someone so brazenly, you know, talking about just really doing wrong by four women at the same time. I mean, I haven't encountered that in years.
Yeah. We haven't even discussed the thing where he got some girl pregnant, he thinks, and
it's, yeah.
And just gave her a fake name and like, you know, it was, who knows if he's going to do the right thing there.
I've listened to this confession three times. Yeah. And the thing I can't escape is when he starts to talk about that, like when he starts to talk about, yeah, also there's this other thing I did, right?
Right.
He still sounds so fucking excited to talk
about
it.
Yeah, he does.
Like, and that's the thing where Zach was in a very, Zach is the guy who's taking the confession.
Yeah, he's the interviewer.
And, you know, he was in a very tricky position, I think, because he couldn't just outwardly judge this guy. He kind of needed to get the information for the purposes of our project. But, you know,
I could tell he wanted to. And that was another thing, too, where I was like, because I was kind of taking cues from how he was. And I was thinking, oh, you know, this is probably a thing where I need to be neutral. And that's why I wrote that first message to you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I can be neutral in this, guys. Yeah. But yeah, he was very diplomatic. And he also did a good job of, like, coaxing out every bit of garbage out of that guy's personality.
Well,
you know,
and he was happy to share
in his neutrality.
Yeah.
You can't really blame him for his neutrality in that situation.
Yeah. I'm sure you probably heard about what's happened with Ryan Adams over the last month or two. I mean, I guess for anyone listening who's not familiar with this, I mean, basically, a lot of women came forth and said that Ryan Adams dangled career opportunities in front of them, you know, sort of in exchange for a sexual relationship. The most disgusting part of it was that some of these girls were very young, like teenagers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing around it, Phoebe Bridgers had a tweet, which was, yeah, this is terrible, but remember that, like, there are all sorts of people around him who knew about this and were enabled it,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Yeah. And that's the thing that has stuck with me from all of that is, like, that's how people like this,
yeah, it's,
go through adulthood.
It makes me realize too that it's more than just single individuals acting alone. It's an ecosystem around them that's fostering their ability to be that way. And I think that it's the ecosystem is the most kind of pernicious part, potentially dangerous part of the whole thing that could be thwarted. Because I think a lot of these things, when people feel comfortable acting the way they act, they just do it more. And so just even, stop.
Yeah, dude, stop.
You're being gross. Like, yeah. Even just like little things like that, I think could go a long way.
Zach, what was it like taking that confession?
And honestly, it was one of the more conflicting and challenging confessions I've taken. I was like sitting there trying to, you know, create an open forum like we do for people to feel comfortable sharing something they might not normally share. And at the same time, just being like, wow, what an asshole. You know, I'm not somebody that likes to bro down about female conquests. That's not who I am. And that's like what he was kind of trying to sit there and do with me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was pretty awkward.
What goes into that mentality? Like, why? Because it, you know, y'all, you're not friends.
No, definitely.
And there's no sort of like you're not bonding. So what do you think was going through his head as he was talking to you?
Honestly, I feel like at this point in life, you know, I'm sure you can say the same. There's just like one out of every 15 to 20 guys you meet is this weird archetype of just like following their dicks around 100% of the time. And that's what he is. He thinks that every guy is like his bro and that every woman out there is for him to conquest.
Yeah.
And to brag about to his quote unquote friends, which he assumed I was one of.
Yeah. But like what makes this guy tick?
I think it can't be anything besides control.
And what do you mean by that? Like, break that down for me so I can understand.
Break down control, as
in this scenario.
In this scenario, it's like he wants the feeling that every second he's spending time with these people, that he has the upper hand. He knows something they don't know. He has some kind of power over them just because they don't see the situation, in the reality. Just the fact that he knows more than they do gives him control and power over them.
And he likes that.
And he likes that.
Like, that's something he associates with love or romance or sex.
Well, it can't just be about getting laid.
It's like, definitely not that.
There's so many different ways to make that happen in today's world that don't require that level of deceit.
I wonder also if he associates deceit with love and sex.
Or maybe it's an insecurity thing. He's afraid to be himself and court somebody. So putting on this thing is wearing a mask, being deceitful and exerting this like weird sense of power. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be himself. He doesn't actually have to be intimate with anybody.
Yeah. He's definitely not experiencing any kind of real emotional intimacy.
No, you can't. With that kind of dishonesty, it's completely impossible. It's not even coming into the sphere of his relationship world.
Maybe there's a more basic thing too, where it's like, what is it that men and women get from having multiple partners when it's like this, right? Mm-hmm. When it's definitely kind of a conquest thing, it's like, what is that? Mm-hmm. What is that? What does someone get from that?
I think some people would argue that, you know, it's in our DNA to have multiple partners, especially in the male DNA to have multiple partners to spread your seed for the highest chance of, you know, reproduction is like, that's the animalistic sense. But it's like doing that. I mean, there's people getting freaky that are completely honest, you know? So it's not about the sex and it's not about multiple partners, because that's happening all the time in great consensual ways that I have no issue with. And you have no issue with, and that anybody involved in that situation is not going to have an issue with, mm-hmm. but it's definitely lies in the deceit. That's where the pleasure is coming from.
I think you're right.
It can't be about the sex, just because it doesn't have to involve deceit.
Like, here's this guy who is at ostensibly at a public place drinking with some friends. Mm-hmm. Definitely not there alone.
Yeah.
And he's there, and then he goes into this booth and is going to give a confession, right? And he did not tell us something fluffy. He told us something pretty bad.
Yeah, pretty juicy.
A true confession. Mm-hmm. And he is very proud of his behavior. He reveals to us that he has been doing this for a long time. No one knows about it. And like, what are you trying to put out there? Is it that he's like, you know, this just super masculine, like, dude who kind of can do whatever he wants or manipulates people? It's like, that's the thing that I've been thinking about. Mm-hmm. And like,
well, in a lot of ways, he's not really putting it out there. Cause like you said, it's a true confession. He was like, maybe he is feeling guilty about it. Maybe that's why he wanted to come tell us. Maybe that's why he did come in while hanging out with friends that probably don't know the truth.
Yeah.
The group of people he's hanging out with probably don't know as much as we do.
And maybe all that bravado that he had in talking to you, like, that's just that's how he always is.
Yeah.
And so that comes out, and then he's telling you the shitty stuff. And maybe if the conversation had been longer with him, maybe he would have expressed more like real guilt.
Yeah. Well, cause I don't think he didn't make it seem like he was chatting about this with his friends.
Oh, and I completely agree with you.
Because he says specifically, you know, that felt great to get off my chest. So obviously he is feeling guilt about it. He's aware that, you know, that's not the correct path forward.
Oof.
Yeah. So maybe he was trying to take the opportunity as like a true confession.
And maybe the thing that's so unnerving about it, and the thing that Ben picks up on and that we're disturbed by, and yeah, maybe he was trying to feel better, but maybe he's just got this arrogant tone whenever he's talking about anything.
Yeah.
Like, under there is real, like, guilt, but he just talks about everything, like...
Yeah, his tone doesn't necessarily match his emotion behind it.
Like, at all, or at all what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's like, he's just really out of touch with his fucking behavior, and What a shithead he is.
Yeah, it's true. I think that there's a pretty prevalent low emotional IQ in today's American male.
Yeah.
And it's just, this is a prime example of that.
Not As Clever As You Think is available everywhere you stream or download music. iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, Napster, Kazaa, LimeWire, Deezer, Warehouse Music, SamGoody.com,
Blockbuster,
Montgomery Ward,
FAO Schwartz,
TWA Airlines,
Circuit City.
Oh my god. The Taking Care of Business song.
Taking Care of Business.
That's not available. No, that is available everywhere you stream music as well. The theme song you heard at the top was written by me, Walker Lukens. It was performed by myself, Zach Catanzaro, and James Wesley Essery. It was engineered by Grant Epley and mixed by old Matt Gerhard.
Song Confessional is produced by myself, Walker Lukens, Aaron Blackerby, Rylan Kettery, Jim Eno, and Mike Lee. It is also brought to you by KUTX.
And apologies to Matt Riley. I know that my car has been parked in your parking spot for like a week now, but